Hello and welcome to another episode of From My Dear Parnassus. I'm your host Atman Vakil, and today's episode is all about my favorite composer ever, Claudio Monteverdi. Yeah, many of you who know me will have also known by this point that I tend to steer every possible conversation towards this man and his music. And yeah, you're about to find out why in the next 3 or 4 episodes, depending on how much time we have. So we are talking about the madrigal so far, and Monteverdi is a gigantic figure in composing this genre for reasons you're about to find out. And he wrote 8 books of madrigals throughout his life. The 9th book was published posthumously. And these 8 are absolute classics. So, yeah, it's really exciting to be able to talk about them. They are my go-to listening material most of the days. Like, at least once a day I listen to some of his madrigals. But yeah, let's really deal with the subject matter here. Today we are going to talk about Monteverdi's early years. So Monteverdi, born 1567, died 1643. Today we'll talk about his work up till around the turn of the 17th century. So those early years, very, very important because they really formed the man musician he came to be later in life especially. And we'll focus on the first 4 books of his madrigals, published respectively in 1587, 1590, 1592, and 1600. So we are actually more or less moving parallel to the time frame from last episode when we talked about madrigals at the end of the 16th century. But before we go any further into Monteverdi, let me just recap for any new listeners what madrigals are and what we have talked about for the past 3 episodes in this series on madrigals. If you are listening to the recording of this episode, you can just skip ahead a bit and get started with Monteverdi. But anyway, here goes. Recap on the madrigal. Secular vocal composition from the Renaissance and early Baroque periods. It's usually unaccompanied, though that changed later on. We'll deal with that one or two episodes down the line. Generally 3 to 6 voices, 5 being very, very common. And there could be even more or less, more or fewer voices. We'll also talk about that. Monteverdi wrote some madrigals for, I think, more than 6 voices, 7 or 8 at times, I think. So the madrigal originated in Italy, traveled all across Europe, very prevalent in England, though the English style, which unfortunately we won't be able to get to, was quite different. And a very important feature is that they're not strophic, they are through composed in form. The emphasis is that each line, each word should really be expressed as musically as possible. You can't have that if you have the same piece of music repeating for different verses of the text. Recapping on the last episodes, our first episode talked about the very early madrigalists like Verdelho and Arkadelt, who were deeply influenced by secular forms from their origins, which were in the Franco-Flemish regions, which is modern-day Belgium, Netherlands, France, roughly that patch. And they came and worked in Italy. And they were also influenced by sacred polyphony, which had sort of reached a peak by that point under composers like Josquin des Prez. And you sort of combine these two styles, the secular French-Flemish style and the sacred Italian style, and you get the madrigal. Earlier madrigals tended to be quite homophonic in nature. But that changed with the mid-16th century composer Adrian Willaert, who really developed a more polyphonic approach. where each voice is pretty independent. All melodies are independent and equivalent. There's no chief melody really commanding the other voices along. We also talked about Willaert's pupil, Cipriano de Rore, who really pioneered more dissonance and expression in his madrigals, and he's quite relevant to today's episode actually, because Monteverdi really respected the work of Cipriano and said that he just wants to continue the developments which Cipriano was already making back in his time. And we talked a bit about Palestrina, the one of the most famous composers of this period. So in his life and after his death, his legacy has endured mostly for sacred music, but he did write quite a few madrigals, which we listened to. And then last episode, we talked about late 16th century composers, Orlando de Lassus, Luca Marenzio, Luzzasco Luzzaschi, and Carlo Gesualdo, who had in their own ways made a lot of progress with the genre, really taking it further, developing it, especially along the lines of romanticism. We listened to how Gesualdo, the prince of Venosa, who murdered his wife after catching her and her lover doing something they weren't supposed to do, he murdered them both. We saw how his music was so dark in its uses of chromaticism, where notes and dissonances are really clashing all the time, and it creates a nice, rich, beautiful texture and takes the genre to new heights, which you don't ever see again. Like, you don't see the dissonance used by Gesualdo in that way till at least Wagner, which is who is 250 years later. So yeah, that's something. But now let's turn to Claudio Monteverdi. First, we'll talk a bit about the man and the circumstances in which he grew up and learned music. He was born and raised in this town in Italy called Cremona. Now, remember, Italy isn't Italy at this point. We're talking 1567, the year of his birth. Italy is a bunch of different city-states, all ruled by their own little king or duke, or some were republics. And Cremona, I think, was actually part of the Spanish Empire because it was under the jurisdiction of Milan, and Milan had been conquered by the Spanish. So I could be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure that Cremona was part of the Spanish Empire. And Monteverdi was born there. He was the son of an apothecary, Baltasare Monteverdi. And he was the eldest of all his siblings. And even his younger brother, Giulio Cesare, who is going to really feature prominently in our next episode, was also a musician. So Claudio learned under the composer Marc Antonio Ingegneri. And you really see a lot of Ingegneri's influence in his works, especially in the way the polyphonic forms were created by both composers. And he was quite a prodigy, Monteverdi, in terms of composition and performance. He was already known in Milan for his skills as a viol player. Now, we don't know whether that was a viola da gamba, a viola of the leg, or a viola da braccio, a viola of the arm. And just means where you place the viol. But yeah, he had developed somewhat of a reputation, according to some sources. He was also really getting started on his composition journey. I think in his teens he published two volumes. One was a small little book of secular compositions for two or three voices, I think. One was sacred, I'm not really sure about that. But yeah, he did publish two collections in his teens, when he was around 16, I think. And then when he's 19, he publishes his first book of madrigals in 1587. Now, it's very important to know that the madrigal was a formidable genre for any budding composer. Now, You could be writing in a lot of different forms, as Monteverdi was already, but to really take on the madrigal, take it head on, write an entire volume of madrigals, publish an entire book of madrigals, and that was something. And here you have this 19-year-old. I'm 19 right now. I haven't published a single book of madrigals. nor am I ever going to, I think. But yeah. He's already published his first book in 1587, and that book is dedicated to a count, the Count of Verona. Now, dedications are going to prove very important later on, because it really shows who was the top dog and why the composer really wanted to curry favor with the top dog. Let's listen to one madrigal from his first book. Now, a very interesting feature of the first book is there's a lot of imitation between voices, and there's a lot of compositional models which Monteverdi is following. You can see that he's studying the works of contemporaries who are removed one generation, like people like Luca Marenzio, for instance. We talked about him last episode. You can see that Monteverdi is studying their works and using them as compositional models. So, here we have our first madrigal of the day from Book 1 of Monteverdi's Madrigals, Baci Soave e Cari. And I'm just going to pull up the translation so I can read it aloud to you before playing the music. And here we are. Sweet and tender kisses, sustenance of my life. First you seize and then return my heart. You want me to learn how a soul in rapture feels not the agony of death yet dies. There is sweet love enough for me to kiss you forever, O sweetest of roses, on whom all has ever rested, and were I able to end my life with your sweet kisses, how sweet that death would be. And we have already mentioned this a few episodes ago, that death here is not exactly death. It's a very naughty innuendo. Death here is a reference to the successful completion of the sexual act. So yeah, now that makes a whole lot sense, doesn't it? Like, oh, sweetest of roses on whom all has ever rested, and were I able to end my life with your sweet kisses, how sweet that death would be. He's talking about something else there. But yeah, madrigals were really, really popular amongst the people because of their creative expression of words, musical expression of words, and they tended to be almost all on the theme of love. So yeah, let's listen to Baci Soave e Cari from Monteverdi's first book of madrigals. Yeah, a 19-year-old wrote that. But yeah, that's just the beginning of Monteverdi's musical journey. That example from his first book of madrigals. We'll be moving quite quickly through books 1 to 3. Unfortunately, because of time constraints, I'll spend a lot more time on the fourth book. We'll listen to examples from the fourth book in both this episode and the next. And we will then move on to book 5 in next episode, which is really, really pivotal for reasons you'll soon know. But yeah, let's move on. The second book of Madrigals is published 3 years later, and again, very, very imitative in its texture, in its polyphonic texture. Again, you see a lot of models based on which Monteverdi is writing. The piece we are about to listen to from his second book of madrigals is this madrigal called Ecco mormorar l'onde. Very nice name, because really you can do a lot of things with it musically speaking. And this one was modeled from two very important styles. And one of the pieces he used as a model was, I think, another madrigal by this chap called Jacques de Werth, who is also going to be mentioned quite a bit later on. I can't exactly place the second style he really adapted in this piece. So we're going to move on for now, but let's listen to the translation. Give me one moment to pull that up. Here we are. Ecco mormorar l'onde. Behold, the waves are murmuring, and the leafy branches and saplings are trembling in the morning breeze, and upon the green boughs the pretty birds are sweetly singing, and the east is smiling. Behold, the dawn is appearing, mirrored in the sea. It brings calm to the sky and a pearly sheen to the gentle frost and bathes the mountains in gold. O dawn of beauty and grace, the breeze is your herald and you the breezes, bringing solace to every fevered heart. So, very beautiful description there of the dawn being a symbol of love. Let's listen to the piece. Lots of interesting word painting going on here with on words like mountains murmuring, ecco mormorar l'onde, waves, etc. Singing, of course, is something which all composers, the word singing, they really stress on that. But yeah, let's.
Ecco già l'alba, 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 ecco già l'alba
Whoops, I just realized I'd been talking while my speaking mic was off. I'm so sorry about that. I was saying that we'll now talk a bit about what Monteverdi was doing in life right now. And a really important change came about around 1589 to 1590. Now, this is 2 to 3 years after the second book, of a piece of which we just listened to, was published. 1589-1590, Monteverdi is appointed to the court of Duke Vincenzo Gonzaga, the Duke of Mantua. I remember that name, very important in studying Monteverdi's life. And he is first hired as a string player in Mantua, either playing the viola da braccio or the viola da gamba. There's some ambiguity, but it's a bowed string instrument. He was a rank and file musician there, supposed to play at all sorts of events there. But we do know that he was quite treasured by the Gonzagas. One thing you need to know about Duke Vincenzo Gonzaga is that he is a proud man. He loves and enjoys good culture. He likes his music, he likes his arts, he likes his philosophy, he likes everything. What he doesn't like is paying for it. There's just a lot of reports in which composers, artists, musicians of his court just don't receive their wages when they are due, and there's only so much they can do about it because he's this big powerful duke and had a very bad reputation as a womanizer, or very not someone you'd like to babysit your daughter or your niece. Oh, definitely not. He was not the best of human beings that way. But that was just how life was in Europe at that point. So Monteverdi is hired into his court as a string player. And a couple of years after that, in 1592, Monteverdi publishes his third book of madrigals, which is now dedicated to Duke Vincenzo Gonzaga. Now, remember, he was hired as a string player, and the top musician in the court at that point was Jacques de Werth, the maestro di cappella. And Jacques de Werth was a very influential composer in his own right. We have a lot of madrigals and other pieces written by him. And at this point, 1592, Jacques de Werth is Monteverdi's boss in many ways. And when your boss starts developing things like smallpox and malaria, you probably want to make sure you are the one who gets his job after he pops off, right? So what Monteverdi does is that he dedicates his third book of madrigals to Duke Vincenzo. He's hired as a singer and a viol player, so he really wants to curry favor and give Duke Vincenzo a sample of what he was capable of. and said that, "Look, boss, I'm dedicating this book of madrigals to you. I could do that over and over again. I could be a really good part of your team if you just make me your top dog. And I could be a great value adder to the music court of Mantua. So, yeah, just keep that in mind." He gives that little hint to Duke Vincenzo Gonzaga. And with that, let's listen to this one collection of madrigals, this three madrigal cycle from the third book. Text is from the poet Torquato Tasso's long epic poem Gerusalemme Liberata, which Monteverdi also uses in his setting of the combat between Tancred and Clorinda, published in his eighth book. We're going to talk about that piece. It's absolutely amazing. But first, I'm going to read out the translation of all three parts really quickly, and we'll listen to them. "Go then, cruel man, go with the same peace you wish me. Go now, wicked one. Soon shall my shadowy spirit depart my body and haunt you for eternity. Just as a fury with snakes and fire shall I torment you as much as once I loved you. And if fate decrees that you survive the sea, escape the rocks and waves, and then reach the field of battle, there, as you lie suffering amidst death and bloodshed, will you pay for my grief, evil warrior? Again and again you will con on Armida." That's her name, the narrator's name. "As you breathe your last, this is my wish." That's the dialogue. Moving on. "Hardly had she uttered these words when the unhappy woman's spirit failed, and she fell swooning, senseless, bathed in an icy sweat, her eyes closed. Then she woke and saw all around her such a desolate, silent place. 'Is he then gone?' she said. 'And has he, without pity, left me here, my life in peril? Could he not linger one moment, nor offer me succor when most I needed it, the traitor? And yet do I love him still, and unavenged, sit weeping on this shore.'" It's more of a lyric and narrative poem. Let's listen to the music from the third book of Madrigals.
Vattene pur crudel, con quel
vattene pur crudel,
vattene pur crudel, vattene pur crudel, con quella pace lascia,
vattene.
Amen.
Yeah, those dissonances in the right there up in the opening statement, opening first line, they really reminded me of many of Monteverdi's contemporaries, Luca Marenzio for one. But yeah, really good stuff there from the third book. Wish we could listen to more of it. Unfortunately, we have to move on, and we'll do that with some more biography. So, where are we right now? We are at 1592. Monteverdi is still a string player slash choirist in the court of Mantua, though his value really starts to go up from this point. So, I'm just going to refer to my paper here for the dates. Give me one second, because no, these are important. Yeah, so what happens is that while he's employed at Mantua, his boss, the man we talked about a while ago, Jacques de Werth, he dies. He's quite old. He dies in, let's see. God, I wish I had got these dates down. I'm sure they're here somewhere. I'm sorry. Let's just say he dies sometime in the mid 1590s. Jacques de Werth dies, and Monteverdi really expresses interest in his position. And it's a really prestigious position, the maestro di cappella, the head of the Duke's music there. Now, the position is left vacant, but unfortunately, Monteverdi doesn't get it here. The position is given to this chap called Benedetto Pallavicino. And while he doesn't get it, we see that the Duke is quite impressed with Monteverdi because Monteverdi is one of the musicians he invites along to trips to Belgium and across Europe along with his traveling retinue. Monteverdi is one of the musicians who's taken along. So, yeah. He is slowly climbing up the ladder, and then right around the turn of the century, Monteverdi marries in 1599. Claudio Monteverdi marries Claudia Cattaneo, a singer in the Duke's ensemble. I love it, don't you? Claudio and Claudia. They both marry in 1599, and a couple of years later they have their first son. And a year after that, Benedetto Pallavicino, the maestro di cappella, dies. Now that is just so fortunate, isn't it, for Monteverdi? Because at this point he gets the position. In 1600, he had published his fourth book of madrigals. You see quite a gap between the third and fourth, right? Between 1592 and 1600. One reason I think this gap exists is because Monteverdi must have been really busy in his duties as a string player in Mantua, working with his colleagues and really being able to perform in all the Duke's ensembles and performances. But yeah, he publishes the fourth book in 1600, and the fourth and the fifth just contain a bunch of madrigals written around the same time in the years preceding to that because of the famous controversy regarding some of those madrigals, which we'll talk about in the next episode. The fourth book is again dedicated to this academy, the Accademia degli Intrepidi of the city of Ferrara. And this academy is. Now, this is a very clever dedication because, on one hand, Monteverdi is paying tribute to the cultural environment in which these madrigals had been really conceived, and he's also paying tribute to Mantua and Duke Vincenzo himself because, like, they are some of because Duke Vincenzo is one of the Academy's most important members. But yeah, now we talk about the fourth book, which is really, really known for its expressiveness. I love this book. And before we talk anymore, let's listen to one madrigal from the fourth book, A Dolente Partita, which translates to A Grievous Separation. I'm going to read out the text. A Grievous Separation. Ah, my life is over. Can I leave you and not die? And yet I suffer the pain of death, and in taking leave of you, feel a lethal vigor that gives life to my sorrow and brings everlasting death to my heart. Yeah, there's a really clever metaphor going on with which the conductor John Elliott Gardiner talked about in his podcast about Monteverdi. I really recommend you check that out. It's a beautiful podcast. At this point, Monteverdi is saying, okay, I have really been expressive in my first three books of madrigals, but can we push the bounds? Can we take what is known to us and really push it as much as possible? Can we add dissonances? Can we add other little tidbits here and there which aren't seen so far? Can we do something like that? The answer is yes, and that's what he does in this book. It's very innovative, something quite new. Many of the madrigals were criticized by theorists for being too new, which is part of the controversy we're going to talk about in the next episode. But note the words of this first madrigal of the fourth book. Ah, grievous separation. Ah, my life is over. Could this choice of text by the poet Giovanni Battista Guarini, could this choice of text be alluding to the separation of musical style which Monteverdi is undergoing right now from the more conservative, reserved earlier style into this new realm which Monteverdi so desperately wants to explore? Yeah, the answer is yes. And you'll notice with the use of dissonances, there is something quite new. Let's listen to this madrigal. A Dolente Partita. Yeah, quite a lot going on there, right? And that's even more evident in our next piece, Sfogava con le stelle, a piece by the poet Ottavio Rinuccini. This piece uses a technique called falso bordone, in which you have all voices moving together on the same chord, like same note for each voice, but together they form a chord for the entire line. So you'll have something like Sfogava con le stelle, or something like La fareste col vostro audio sembiante pietosa. So a lot on all the syllables being repeated on the same note, and the entire choir does that. This practice again comes from sacred music. You have a lot of this going on in liturgical sacred music, and that practice again comes from the ancient Gregorian chants, the plain chant. It's a really, really striking poem by Ottavio Rinuccini. And remember, at this point, Monteverdi is top dog in Mantua, at least when it comes to the Duke's private music, secular music. He's still not in charge of sacred music, but he will be in a few years. He's really well established now, has a good reputation as a hard-working, very, very, very hard-working man. Duke Vincenzo Gonzaga puts him through a lot, just commanding a lot of music from him, still not paying him as much as he is owed. And even what he is owed is a very paltry salary. Let me go through the text of this poem. And I'm going to speak out the Italian as well, because why not? Sfogava con le stelle un infermo d'amore. Sotto notturno ciel il suo dolore. E dicea fisso in loro, O immagini belle dell'idol mio c'adoro, siccome mi mostraste, mentre così splendete la sua rara beltate, così mostraste a lei i vivi ardori miei. La fareste col vostr'aureo sembiante pietosa, sì, come me fate amante. A lovesick soul was divulging his pain to the stars in the night sky, and gazing at them said, O lovely images of the woman I adore, just as now you reflect her rare beauty to me in your shining rays, were you to show her my ardent love, your golden gleam would make her as merciful as you make me loving. This is set beautifully using the falso bordone technique I just talked about. Especially when you go to the last line, there's a really nice dissonance on the word pietosa, which is resolved really beautifully. This is again all quite new, the dissonance you're going to learn, listen to in this. It's not in nowhere near traditional for madrigalists to write like this. Especially the word pietosa, piteous or merciful. Yeah, let's just listen to this and then we'll wrap up. Sfogava con le stelle.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite madrigals. But yeah, it's really, really, really poignant and really, really sets you in a very particular mood. That's why I really love listening to this over and over and over. We have time actually for one more madrigal. And because it's spring, I'm going to use a madrigal which is about spring. Io mi son giovinetta, I am young. This is again part of the fourth book. I am young and I laugh and sing as spring returns, sang my sweet shepherdess, when suddenly my heart sang in reply to her song like a merry little bird. I too am young and laugh and sing in love's soft and tender spring, which flowers in your fair gaze. And fly from passion, she said. If you have sense, fly, for in these eyes will there never be spring for you. So, ooh, burn, as they say. That shepherdess really setting that poor young man breaking apart his hopes into nothing. But yeah, some really interesting musical stuff going on. When the shepherdess rejects him using the word fuji, fly away, go away. You have a nice little melisma on that. Fuji, etc. And the voices really form a nice harmony singing that last line. Primavera per te non sarà mai. Will there never be spring for you? Let's listen to this last madrigal and wrap things up for today. Io mi son giovinetta. Beautiful piece there. I really love its vibrance. And now we are out of time. I'm going to rush up the ending. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for the famous Monteverdi Artusi controversy. See you next week. Bye. Have a good one.